You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, this is the Food Talk Radio Show, and each week we taste innovative, new and interesting food or drink. Terrible part of the job. And we take a look at the latest food tech advances from across the UK. Hello everyone, my name is Sue Nelson and I'm joined by the lovely Guy Routledge, co-founder of Food Rush. Hi Guy.
Hello Sue, how are you doing? Good afternoon.
Yes, not bad at all, not bad at all. We've got two lovely guests here. We've got Damien Lee, who's got the most extraordinary story to tell you about noodles and how to eat noodles and all that. And I'm faced with loads of pots of noodles, which we're going to eat.
I think the words pot noodles should probably be banned for the next hour or so.
Pots of noodles.
Pots of delicious looking, healthy, tasty noodles.
And then I've got Marguerite Belte with me. And it's going to be a really interesting conversation because she knows everything about food exhibitions and magazines. I've got about 100 questions to ask you, Marguerite. So there we go. Just to kick off, would you like to introduce yourself, Damien, and just explain to me, how did you get into noodles? I will. You're very good at talking, I know, because you're very passionate about what you do. So I might interrupt you if you go on with your life story a bit too long, but it's so fascinating.
It's an amazing story.
It is an amazing story. So just give us a little synopsis of how you got here.
Sure. And yeah, please tell me when to start.
I won't.
So look, I'm Damien Lee, the founder of Mr. Lee's Noodles. And we describe ourselves as a food tech company. And firstly, we're about food and healthy living, but we're also about technology and bringing you innovative technology and how we deliver our product into the market. So my journey with the noodles kind of goes back. I mean, I'm not a food guy at all. I'm not from the food industry at all. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And pretty much all my life, I've created value in businesses. But it came from my personal experience a few years back when I was actually diagnosed with cancer. And I was in the middle of another startup company that I was developing, a tech company. I'd moved down to Bournemouth from London to be by the beachside. Being originally from Sydney, I missed the sea. And I was
probably
given
not quite the same, is it? Bournemouth, Sydney. It's a nice place, though.
Nice place, but definitely not like home. And a few years back, I was given the good news, as I call it, that I had late stage 4 cancer. And I was only given a few weeks at the time to get my affairs in order. And being a single dad of two young boys and so forth, I thought, well, wow, you know.
Can I just say that getting your affairs in order meant that you were given the news, really, that you'd only got a couple of weeks to live?
Pretty much so. So they thought I'd be checking out at that point. But, you know, I'm a fighter. So I had to make some serious decisions at that point. And with the help of my girlfriend, Lenka, as well, we said, okay, let's go to war on cancer. We've got to get through this ordeal. So part of that was about changing my whole way I lived my life. And that was about taking the nasties, going raw in my diet, taking the sugars, the salts, the saturated fats, and taking all the chemo that they were going to offer me as well, and get on with getting better. I did. And it took me about a year to get through it all. In that year, I was then declared in complete remission, but I'd lost my business. You know, my previous startup.
Can't do both, can you?
Exactly.
So I've got to concentrate on that.
Exactly. Mm. So when I came out the other side, I thought, wow, what am I going to do now? You know, I've got to start something. I've got to rebuild my life. And one of my guilty pleasures all through my life was always instant noodles. I'd eaten a lot of instant noodles. Did I care that they were full of nasties, Z's, MSGs? Not really, because they tasted okay. Well,
they do taste good, even though...
They don't taste good, Guy.
Well, sorry, another little flavour sachet with the chilli and
they
the sesame oil.
Nice.
No, they do.
They do not.
They have a time
really
and a place,
hungry.
Sue.
So, well, I was guilty of eating a lot of them, and because they were convenient as well, and I've always had a hectic, busy lifestyle. And so through that year of my journey, I did crave noodles. I thought, God, I could kill for a noodle.
But I'm not allowed.
So it was going against my new sort of ideas of and beliefs and eating. And I'm a huge believer in you are what you eat. I really do believe that. And so I thought when I came out this side, okay, I'm going to do something. You know what I'm going to do? I need to create a new business. And there was a bit more of a backstory, but I'm not going to go into that. We haven't got time. But I said, I'm going to create a noodle, but a noodle, instant noodle in a cup. We prefer not to call it a pot noodle, by the way. We call it a cup noodle. And I said, I'm going to create a healthy one that's not bad for you with no nasties. I want one that's the lowest in salt, the lowest in sugar, the lowest in saturated fats, and the lowest in calories as well. So I set out and embarked on my journey to create a healthier instant cup noodle. There's 120 billion of them sold each year around the world.
And 120 billion are mostly awful.
Absolutely.
Don't listen to Guy on this one.
Awful, but tasty. but no.
the point of the tasty thing, though, Guy, is that tasty means it's got a lot of salt in and a lot of sugar.
Yeah, in many ways it does.
Actually, because that's what human bodies crave. You get addicted to that stuff. Yeah. And it's deliberately put in there. If you don't eat that stuff very often, which I don't, I can't take it because it just tastes horrible to me. Mm. Because it is completely manufactured, isn't it, Damien? Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
Absolutely. Mm. If I can just take 1 second to say what inspired me to do this, because when I had my previous startup, I actually was on a business trip in China, and there were two brothers there, funny enough, called the Lee brothers as well, that were China's fifth largest instant noodle manufacturer. Mm. And I knew them, and they took me on a tour of their factory, and they asked me at the time, they said, could you help us get our noodle into England? We only sell it in China, and I think they sell 5 billion a year. And I said, look, I'm busy with my own business. And I said, but by the way, which is your favorite noodle when we're in the factory? And one of the brothers actually looked at me and laughed, and he said, are you kidding? We don't eat our own noodle. And I said, what? Why not? And they said, if you knew what we put in them,
you wouldn't eat them.
You wouldn't eat them. No. And I said, why? How? And they said, Damien, 10 years ago, there were over 200 noodle manufacturers in China. Today, there's less than 60. And it's very competitive. Everybody's driving each other down on margin. So we're having to dumb down our products
price,
more and more.
Price,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm. And, you know, there's nothing natural in our noodle. And I was like, wow. So that was a big crazy, sort of... And that's
dreadful.
Where it kind of the core reason it started for me from
dreadful.
That.
Well, I've been converted now. I won't touch one of those anymore.
Well done. About
I'm
time.
At least all about these.
Converted one person. So Lucy, our producer, has joined us today because we want, you know, the proof is in the pudding. We've got to eat it. So Marguerite, are you up for a little bit of a little noodles?
Absolutely. I've
good.
Been staring at
okay,
them.
Okay, so just explain to me, because you won't even, Lucy's just bored a kettle, but you will not even though Lucy is a massive foodie, you won't actually let her make these noodles because she won't make them correctly, is what you said just earlier. So just explain to me, what should you do if you get hold of some Mr. Lee's noodles?
Well,
the correct
to be honest, why? It's very simple. It's the same as pretty much every other instant noodle. You add hot water, let it close down the foil lid again, and let it sit for 3 minutes.
So you're almost letting it steam as well as letting the water.
Exactly. I mean, our pots are... pots, I said it myself. Then. Our cups are full of freeze-dried ingredients as well. Most of the other brands tend to use dehydrated ingredients in their soups.
And
noodles.
What's the difference between freeze-dried and dehydrated?
Well, freeze-drying, firstly, it's a more expensive process. And freeze-drying actually locks in all the nutrition. It locks in all the flavor. It keeps the shape and integrity of the ingredients, and they just taste a hell of a lot better. So there's a lot more goodness kept in freeze-drying, in the freeze-drying process, where dehydrating sucks out all the protein,
right.
Sucks out all the flavor.
A bit like cold press and hot press.
Exactly. Yeah. So you'll see the difference, you'll taste the difference in our product.
So what have we got in front of us then? We've got...
Right, this is the new spring range. So
how do you pronounce that? Shaolin?
Shaolin monk.
Monk.
Yeah,
vegetables.
we have six flavors in our... we have warrior fighting shrimp, Hong Kong street beef, Tai Chi chicken, Penang chicken curry laksa, Shaolin monk and dragon fire mushroom. So
I'm going to make Guy have the Shaolin monk vegetables on the basis that I think he needs to be a little bit healthier.
Yeah, good.
What do you
good.
Reckon?
I think that's a good idea.
I think that's a great idea too.
Yeah.
I love a vegetable.
Do you?
That's
you love it.
Good.
You love a vegetable.
So what's the important thing here is you give it a good stir. So once it's done, it's 3 minutes. You stir it because all the goodness is on the bottom. Mm. The seasoning falls to
and
the bottom,
the
so you've got to stir it up, all the flavour. So just give it a good stir.
I shouldn't have gone out for lunch before this, should I?
I was just thinking that.
But I did have quite a healthy lunch.
I haven't just come back
from
lunch, so that's a stupid
idea. We have another one of our new range. We have Hong Kong street beef.
What do we have? Do you fancy a bit of Hong Kong street beef, or are you after
street beef?
What's the other one?
And we've got Penang chicken curry laksa.
No, the beef sounds wonderful.
Beef, right, yeah. I'm going to pass the beef over to you. Just
thank
been prepared.
You.
Now, in the studio, I can only describe the smell.
The
really.
Smell is amazing.
There's a lovely smell. I mean, I presume if you have a pot noodle, it don't smell of anything. And do they, Guy? You've had some before.
I don't think I've ever had a pot noodle, actually.
Actually, smell of anything.
Oh, I've given Guy the Hong Kong street beef.
Have you?
Yeah, because...
Oh, it's in the wrong... It's in the...
Yeah, because these are this is our new range, sample range I'm bringing in, so they're not marked.
Okay.
This is the beef.
I've just lost some beef. I'm very disappointed
now.
There you go.
All right, hold on.
But the vegetables...
Oh, we've got the vegetables.
The vegetable smells amazing as well.
There we go. There's the beef.
So there's the beef. So that's lovely. And so these are about, I would say, about the size of a half pint glass. So they're pretty big.
Bigger than that.
460 grams when served with water.
Yep.
So it's a good, you feel like you've had a proper meal.
Yep.
And I can see like real ingredients in here. I can see like herbs, spring onion and cauliflower and the noodles, of course.
Yeah. Can I just say this is the first time I've ever had anything in a cup, as you call it, pot as I call it.
I'm on it. And it's guilt-free.
It's guilt-free.
They're very hot, so be careful.
They're very, very hot. So while we're all tucking in, you've now not only done this, you've gone into another area, haven't you, in term, because you can't resist it because you are an entrepreneur and just making noodles is not enough.
Not enough.
So what are you doing now?
Look, when I created my noodle, I really felt that we needed something innovative and cool in terms of how we deliver our product to the market. And for me, it was logical in reaching our market was to find innovative technology. And I dreamt up the idea of creating a noodle vending machine. And
Do they come out like this with all the water and everything is hot and served for you?
Absolutely.
Or does it just give you a pot?
No, it comes out as a hot, ready, vended meal, 24/7. So it comes in, it injects with the hot water, and it serves you your meal ready to go, 24/7 on real estate. So when I went into the market to find myself a noodle vending machine, we call them a noodle kiosk, I found there wasn't one. So we literally had to go into the market.
So you had a great idea.
One.
I think I'll go and find one, or even adapt one, but there wasn't.
There wasn't. So we've really innovated and developed our noodle kiosk, and they're cashless, they're intelligent. And Mr. Lee's Noodle has got big 32-inch touchscreens. Mr. Lee's Noodle kiosk knows if you're a male or a female. It's got recognition, facial recognition. It doesn't capture your images, but it captures your images and studies your images, and it understands very quickly if you're a male or female. And it understands your age group within a 5-year age range. Exactly.
Well, so I don't like that. I really don't like that.
But the whole idea of that is then he's
going, there's an old woman here trying to buy noodles. Sorry, you're not allowed. We only serve people under 35.
You won't work it out.
We serve everyone. We're not picky. But the idea is there that it engages with you. So it will push you relevant content on that screen. So the idea of our screen is to inform the consumer, engage with the consumer, educate the consumer, and entertain the consumer. So you're
chatting the consumer up. But you've got a machine that's chatting you up while you're there, waiting for your hot water to boil away.
Fantastic.
So we inform, and it's about an experience around a Mr. Lee's Noodle kiosk. So a Mr. Lee's Noodle kiosk, there's a 45-second vend time. So in that vending time, that's a huge opportunity for us to engage with that consumer around the screen. And that's where we entertain, inform, and push them smart content. So third-party advertisers today know they're very lucky if they've got, particularly a millennial on a university, if they've got their attention span for 2 or 3 seconds before they've flicked past you on their phone, swipe past. We've got them while they're waiting for their noodle. And what we're finding
is... And they're not going anywhere because they're not going anywhere.
Absolutely.
Because they want their noodles. Mm.
And we're finding that usually when someone's waiting for their noodle, there's 2 or 3 friends around them as well. So we've got a lot of eyes on that screen. So we also track where their eyes, what they're looking at on the screen, the engagement time on the screen. But we're also returning that information to the host site and returning them that information on what's going on their real estate. We can tell them today they had 782 people pass this location.
At this age, this time.
Etc. So it's very, very powerful information. So for me, the vending industry was a dinosaur, considering how much technology's moved on nowadays. And the vending industry didn't want to change because the attitude in vending, as far as I'm concerned, is if it ain't broke, why fix it? Why should we invest more? It works.
That's a huge opportunity for you, isn't it?
It doesn't work. I mean, how many times you put 20p in to get a Kit Kat? I don't know whether it is. And
doesn't come out.
It doesn't come out.
Absolutely.
I mean, how many times you do that and 2 come out? That almost never happens. Does it?
I don't know about that.
Well, the law of averages, there should be, for every time you... only don't get any, you should get 2 occasionally, but you never do you?
Perhaps.
No. Yes. And that was a big thing for me, sort of being an entrepreneur and putting my business hat on. I thought the biggest cost in vending actually is in the maintenance and the refilling. and sending somebody out to a vending machine when somebody says, I just put my pound in and nothing came out.
Yeah.
And you've got to then, they call you up and they've got to send somebody out to actually come and see what's wrong with the machine. Yeah. So that's a headache for the real estate. And Mr. Lee's Noodle Kiosk knows exactly what's going on inside it. We can fix 70% of any issues remotely.
Remotely. That's amazing.
We understand exactly our sales, our stock levels to the second.
The stock levels are important,
absolutely,
isn't it? Because you don't want somebody to turn up and actually it's half full.
Half full. So we don't have to send somebody out because we know, and we don't send people to refill because we can send, automatic data goes back to our fulfillment center and then we send out exactly what's required at that vending machine, just what we call just in time. So it just sends, automatically generates orders according
that's
to sales
very,
and then where it is
very
as well.
Cool.
Very cool. So you are a technology company, as you said. The noodles just happen to be at the end.
Well, we're a tech company and a food company for sure, because the noodle kiosk is just one route to market for us.
Yep.
We've got to generate an enormous amount of interest from the airline industry, the travel industry, hotel industry, specialist retailers and so on. So, you know, we're negotiating at present very deeply now with 6 international airlines from Australia through to the Middle East to here to Europe.
I can see the airlines loving this.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect for that kind of thing, isn't it?
Marguerite, you've just had a little... Have you got the vegetable? No, what have you got?
I've got a beef. I've got a Hong Kong beef.
And your thoughts?
It was very, very good, I must say.
It's a bit hot at the moment.
It's very hot, yes. It's very hot. But it's a very fine balance of spices. And as we just said before, you can really recognize the ingredients, what's there.
I'm actually chewing stuff that's real.
Yeah.
Which was a surprise.
Yes, which is a surprise.
I have to say, it is much, much better than I thought.
I'm pleased.
I know you're lovely and everything, but I wasn't expecting it to be that brilliant. And it's absolutely fine. I mean, it's not Michelin style restaurant stuff, because that's not the point of it at all. No. But I could eat that. Which I never thought I'd say.
Wow. I'm really pleased.
Yeah. So that's good.
That's very cool.
I've
got the vegetable one. It's very, very tasty. And it feels fresh, even though it's, you know, it was freeze-dried and now it's just been kind of, you know, brought back to life with some hot water. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is still a little bit hot, so I haven't had the chance to enjoy the full thing. But yeah, really, really nice.
Hmm.
One thing that sprang to mind when you were chatting earlier about this kiosk that you've come up with, it almost sounded like you had this... vision from the beginning. It was like, I don't just want to do a food brand, I want to do an innovative approach to, you know, the delivery mechanism as well. And something that people in business often talk about is you first have to validate that concept before you go and spend a whole load of money on building this machine. So is that what happened, or did you just say let's go for it and see what happens?
Look, it was a gut feeling, and look, any good business starts with a good business plan. Mm. So even when the business was just Damien Lee by himself in the kitchen, it was literally about, I spent the first 2 months writing my business plan on how I was going to do this business. And it was 2 intensive months of writing a sensible, structured business plan based on lots of research that was available to me at the time. And that hasn't stopped. Mm. Our business plan keeps adapting. We're fluid. The research keeps happening. And as more and more people have gathered around our brand, and we have some really amazing people that have now joined this brand, including, and I can say now, the original founder of Coffee Nation Vending, which is now, most people would know it today, as Costa Express. It went on to become Costa Express, and that gentleman's Martin Dawes. And I see him as the sort of the daddy of vending in the UK, who innovated and changed the way he thought coffee vending should be at the time. And now we accept it, as I said, Costa Express, and now there's Lavazza machines, and he's changed the face of coffee vending. So when he heard about us and what we're doing, he thought, wow, this is the journey you guys are about to go on that I've already been on.
How useful is that on your board, really?
Absolutely.
That's what you need.
Mm. He's a powerful name in vending, and in the vending world, he's highly regarded, and that brings, you know, wonderful traction to our business, and also confirmation that a guy like him wanting to join our brand is we're doing something right. And he's one of numerous amazing people that are coming into the brand on an advisory level, investor level, and team level. So
that's all good stuff. I mean, I think we meet a lot of producers, and often their holy grail is to get into a supermarket. So I've developed this thing, you know, I know that I've made it because I've got into Waitrose or Sainsbury's. I can tell my mum and she'll be proud, and she can go with her trolley and my stuff's on the shelf. There are some huge downsides to being listed in a supermarket. And it isn't necessarily the Holy Grail. And you decided not to go that route, haven't you, deliberately?
Absolutely. That was always my strategy, was not the supermarket first. As I said, I'm not from the food industry. I'm not from the retail industry, but it was obvious to me.
It's a business decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And you go into any supermarket today, there's 20 instant noodle soup brands on the shelf. Mm. I didn't want to be mixing it up with 20 other brands. I don't have the Unilever marketing budgets. Okay, so who are
the other? I'm sorry to interrupt, but the other problem that you've got is if you're lumped in with those, mm-hmm. people are going to assume it's got the same nasties in as well.
Absolutely.
Which is not helpful.
Absolutely. So I wanted to establish our brand and reputation through roots, basically in a big, what I consider a white space. And that's the soft underbelly market. I wanted to get into the hotels. I wanted to get onto the airplanes. I want to get onto the trains. I want to get into the universities, colleges, defense force bases, and so on via our noodle kiosk. I want to go into the specialty stores, online, and so on, and establish our brand.
You're not very ambitious, are you?
He's taking over the world soon.
Not very ambitious.
But it's
interesting because loads of people don't have that approach. You know, it's I've got to go through, well, first it was normally Ocado, isn't it? And then it's Holland and Barrett and
Whole
Foods.
Mm-hmm. Selfridges.
But actually saying that there are lots and lots of routes to market. It isn't necessarily consumer retail.
Absolutely. And as I said, there's lots of brands out there. The other thing about our noodle is we're the most expensive. And I purposely made our noodle the most expensive instant noodle in the market. I decided when I came into the market, I looked at what was out there and I said, who are the best, as far as I'm concerned, instant noodle, cup noodle brands in the market? I thought it was Kabuto and Itsu, the two other brands, great brands. They retail on the supermarket shelf for £2. But I said to myself and my team as I grow, I said, they're the best brands today in the UK. We need to do 10 times better. And we're going to charge a lot more. So it has to be better. And that's what I believe we've gone out and done. And the £2.99 retail point for us, where again, some of the industry experts, when they heard about what I was doing, said, you're crazy. You'll never get £2.99 for a noodle. You know, the market's £2
or
less.
The price, though, you can move it. So why not start off with that? I don't know why people get so hung up on price.
Absolutely.
Because if it's not working, change it.
You immediately position yourself at the top of the noodle food chain.
Exactly.
By being, we're the most expensive.
That's it. We're the most expensive.
And then you can back it up.
We're the costliest to make. We have the highest grade ingredients. We're a premium product. We call ourselves the champagne of noodles.
It's got to be quality.
It's got to be quality. So look, it's working for us. And in fact, we have a lot of, we're in hotel chains in Scandinavia now. They're actually selling our noodle for £5 to £6 equivalent, because what they're doing, as you said earlier, it's almost like a fresh noodle. Mm. If you decant these out of the pot, which a lot of our people are doing, and putting them into a bowl, they're serving them as fresh noodles in their lobby restaurants and hotels. That's a Mr. Lee's noodle, but they're getting £6 for it.
Scandinavia for you.
Wow. Well, it's happening up here in Scotland too.
Yes, we were talking last week about, we had some market, not last week, the week before, we had some market research, didn't we?
We're
looking at offal, and they were saying that the number one offal in southern Scotland is testicles. So I just rest my case as that.
You could probably freeze dry some of those, put them into noodles, taste delicious.
Damien, just a top tip here. Mm-hmm. If you have some testicle flavoured, you know, noodles they could do very well in Scotland.
Okay. Just
you might want to research that one.
We'll keep that one in mind.
Yeah. So the supermarkets weren't the sort of route for you.
Not yet, no.
Things like airlines and universities, though, surely that's putting pressure on your price point.
No. The university market, where we have our noodle kiosk right now, they're retailing at £2.99. And it kind of wasn't a price that I just dreamt up. Again, we did a lot of research with student communities because we thought that'll probably be the lower most price-sensitive market for us would be the student community versus the middle-income earners and older adults. But the student community actually said, once they understood the USP around our noodle and did their taste tests and so forth, and compared to a pot noodle and other noodles, they told us that they would consider and happily pay £2.99 for this product. Some were even saying £3.50.
Are they comparing it, though, to a hot meal as opposed to, let's say, something else out of a vending machine? You know, it's what is the price comparison that is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I mean...
The mindset of somebody buying it. Because it's actually a meal. It feels like a meal.
It is. It's a light meal replacement is what we see. Look, you know, the only other options they've got in vending is chocolate bar and crisps. Mm. So there's no comparison there. It's particularly popular when the restaurants are closed after hours. As you know, universities, you've got this footfall going on after the restaurants are closed, particularly at exam time. They're in 2, 3 in the morning, so they've got no other options. And considering they pay £2.60 for a Starbucks on campus, $2.99 was to get a meal. Was
coffee
kind of
makes me laugh. I mean, how
we're just keeps going up, doesn't it?
We're now so, you know, we're so attuned to spending £3 on a cup of coffee. I sit there and I just go, I can't believe it. If you're spending that on a coffee and you're sitting and using the table for an hour and going to the toilet, £3 actually
and using the Wi-Fi
makes sense. Yeah, but to go in, get a coffee and go out again for £3 makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, crazy.
Marguerite, I know with your, we'll talk in a minute about your sort of magazine background and all the shows that you do. This really is innovation, isn't there? And a lot of people say they're innovative, but this actually is real innovation.
Absolutely, absolutely, because it touches on so many levels. What we really notice what real innovation is about. You've got the technology aspect, you have got the better for you product, so a product that was taken apart, put into little pieces and then re-engineered. It's a healthier version. It's a better version. We're looking at the nutritional aspects in the food here. So, and then the routes to market. Mm. Then the vending machine. I mean, there's so many aspects here. So it's a total innovative
and
package.
And the power for me is not just the product. It's the fact that you've really engineered your own route to market because you couldn't find what you wanted. So that's putting those two things together really works, I think.
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic illustration, which is why we were so pleased to welcome Damien to one of our events.
That event was
Food Vision last month in London. Mm-hmm. Our global event for the food and nutrition industry.
He's going to be one of these food stars, isn't he? That people are going to talk about in years to come. You know, like Craig Sams of Green and Black, or
we certainly hope so.
He's going to be one of those guys, isn't he? Everyone goes, oh yeah, I'm do you remember Damien Lee? I've met him. We're just going to have a break for a minute because we've got a little clip here. So we're just going to listen to this clip and then we'll come back and have another discussion with Damien and Marguerite.
So I'm here at the IFE exhibition and I've come over to the Barracudos stand, and it's a very impressive stand, very light, airy, and in front of me there's three bottles of drink. Basically we've got still protein vitamin water, and there's three flavours here. So we got coconut and pineapple, raspberry and pomegranate, and mango and peach. And I'm here with Fahad. He is the CEO and a one-man band, as he calls it. So Fahad, can you tell me a little bit about the Barracudos product?
Yeah, so we started to develop the Barracudos protein vitamin water range almost 2 years ago. I kind of got the idea from our frustration, you can say, just of the availability of soft drinks in the market that were just full of sugars, and even the sports drinks that were marketing themselves as healthy, but they were also full of sugars and didn't provide any sort of nutritional value that I was looking for as a regular gym goer. What I did was spotted two things. One was an opportunity and one was a problem. The problem was, of course, the sugar, too much sugar, not enough nutritional value in our drinks. And the opportunity was that protein was on the rise. A lot of consumers were wanting more on-the-go, convenient ways to get their protein in the diets. So I just thought, why not put it in water? It's the most convenient way to get your protein in instead of a heavy protein shake that's full of fats and carbs, things that consumers don't want. Or you've got obviously the bars, but you know, you can't have the bar all the time. So I just thought of the idea, passed it around a few consumers, done a bit of consumer testing, and people loved it. And then I started developing the product. So it took us 2 years to perfect the formula and find the right manufacturer. And now we're here and people love it. I mean, consumers love it, buyers are liking it. They love the new concept, and we'll see how it goes after this.
Absolutely. So can you explain to me and the listeners exactly what protein vitamin water is?
Okay, so our products, it's water. It's infused with whey protein isolate, 10 grams. And also vitamins B5, B6 and B12, 100% of your recommended intake for that. The benefits are that not only are you hydrating yourself, but the protein is helping you to recover. If you're someone that is, I don't know, living an active lifestyle or is health conscious, it's perfect for you. And the B vitamins is, of course, what it does is helps fight tiredness and fatigue. So once again, if you're active lifestyle kind of individual, it's perfect combination of recovery and natural energy.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we've got, you know, there's a few drinks on the market sort of made for sort of gym goers. And I'd say probably a problem with them in the past has been maybe just the taste has not been there. So, I mean, obviously, you've got a lot of fans here today, and I tried some earlier, and obviously it tastes fantastic. So has it been sort of quite difficult? Have you had to go through quite a lot to get that taste exactly where you want it?
Yeah, so that is what it took us. Out of the 2 years, 1.5 years was spent on that. It was extremely difficult to get whey protein in a water blended so that you can't taste that murky kind of taste consumers don't like. Obviously, our development team done a great job. The factory that we're working with done a great job. But yeah, that took us a very long time. We went through quite a few factories to get to this, but it was worth the hard work because consumers love it. They appreciate the taste. They're actually amazed sometimes that this is actually a protein product because they can't taste the protein. And it's only 45 calories, so it's guilt-free as well. So, and that's something that they can't believe as well. So it's good, yeah.
Yeah, so you mentioned sort of yourself in terms of when you were going to the gym. Is it sort of people leading an active lifestyle that you'd say is your main target market?
Yeah. If you look at the brand itself, we're not really marketing or coming across as a supplement kind of brand. We have identified that protein and wellness is not a niche anymore. It's very much mainstream. The kind of regular individual wants these kind of products. So that's the way we've created our product. That's the kind of consumers that we're aiming at. Gym goers, they love it. But you know, you could be someone that just likes to jog on a regular basis, or cycle, or CrossFit, or yoga. You know, if you're someone, or it's, I mean, I was quite surprised, but some people are even using this drink as a drink that helps them keep fuller for longer, because protein has that property. So they will have it alongside their lunch, or instead of snacking, they'll have it, and it keeps them fuller for longer. So yeah, it's a variety of customers using it for different reasons. But I wouldn't say that it's specifically aimed at bodybuilders or those kind of individuals. It's more mainstream, yeah.
So, I mean, on a personal note, you mentioned, obviously, you're a one-man band. Was you doing something completely different before this, or have you always sort of been close to the food industry?
Nothing to do with food industry. I was actually in banking before this, so nothing to do with this, yeah. I think it was just more of a... I saw an opportunity, but not only that, I just thought that I could do something better than the others, and I thought, yeah, why not go for it? It's extremely difficult to enter an industry that you don't have no contacts in, no knowledge of, so I made a few mistakes in the beginning, but I was lucky enough to have a few, you could say, mentors along the way that I met, and they really helped me, gave me the knowledge and the direction to get the brand to what it is now and the product to what it is now. So yeah, nothing to do with food and drinks, but I feel like now I have enough knowledge, yeah.
I mean, well, I can see that there's a few people at your stand at the moment, so I'll let you get back to them in just a moment. I mean, in terms of going forward, where would you like to see your drinks in, say, sort of 5-10 years' time?
Okay, so, I mean, in terms of the brand itself, we are a functional drinks brand, so we really want to create innovative, healthy beverages. In terms of the product itself, I would love to see it in all the independent gyms, all the gym chains, health stores, and maybe even the multiple grocers. Yeah, why not? Yeah, that's the kind of places that we're aiming at. Getting a lot of interest from abroad, so Middle East, Scandinavian, South American, and North American regions. So it could be even, yeah, worldwide as well. You know, people are increasingly looking for healthy products everywhere. So I would like to see it going to that direction, and hopefully the brand add more products, more innovative products for the consumers, and grow in that way. Yeah,
fantastic. Well, good luck. And where can we find out more?
Okay, yeah, you could go on www.barracudos.com, or you can go on our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, which is Barracudos UK.
Thank you very much, Farad, and good luck with the project.
Well, that was all fascinating stuff. And now we're back with Damien and his noodles, and Marguerite and her amazing knowledge of all sorts of things to do with food, actually. So you're with William Reed Business Media, which won't mean anything to most people because that's the sort of business name, so to speak. But the company does a lot of food exhibitions, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the company is over 150 years old and started with a publication for the retail industry, the grocer, and that's how this company then grew organically and through acquisition, and now runs some of the largest UK.
Everybody knows the grocer. Yes. I mean, everybody. It's just been around for, as you say, literally over 100 years.
154, yeah. I think.
And that was the cornerstone of what the business was built on. You've also got Restaurant Magazine and Meat Trades Journal. You've got all sorts of stable of magazines in
Absolutely.
There to do with the food industry.
Yeah, paper and digital.
There must be loads of people working on that side. That's quite time consuming, I should imagine, and quite intensive.
Well, we're a global team, a growing global team based across various offices in the UK, in the United States, France, and Asia as well, with a Singapore office. So. Global domination almost.
But
everyone here is taking over the world.
Damien's not far behind you, yes. And in terms of the exhibitions, you run loads of different exhibitions as William Reid, don't you?
Yes, William Reid. Oh, I don't know the exact number, but we run several large scale exhibitions in the food and drink industry, and also our conferences and events
We're going to talk about your specialism in a minute. Can I just talk about the sort of food events? I go to them, and they just seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger with more and more exhibitors. Are you finding that, or is that just my perception?
No, I think that's a very very astute observation. I mean, the interest in food collectively, I think, is growing and developing. The people who are taking an active interest in trying to put something fresh and new forward. Is also growing.
It's the new rock star we keep saying on this program. It's the new sexy thing to do.
It is sexy. It's sexy to cook. It's sexy to eat. It's sexy to talk about food. And it's sexy to develop it and try to sell it. So it's attracting.
Although I have to say that neither me or Guy have been seen as sexy. And we just talk about food on this program all the time.
Speak for yourself,
Sue. Oh, okay.
I will not get into that conversation.
No, I wouldn't if I were you. So we are seeing more and more people. I mean, I know you go to exhibitions as well, don't you? Trade exhibitions.
Sure.
I think a lot to explain what you're doing rather than sell product, aren't you?
That's really? Right. Just get the initial early exposure and get to meet the players in the market.
I'm always stunned when I go to exhibitions because I'm a bit older than most people and sort of been doing trade exhibitions for 35 years and in all sorts of sectors. I'm always stunned by how bad some people are on their exhibition stands as well as how good some people are. You've really got to know what you're doing because, you know, sometimes I see people rock up for 3 days at Olympia or Excel or NEC and... I don't know why they bother paying the money, really, because they're not prepared and they haven't worked out what a trade exhibition is about.
I think it's a tricky subject. I mean, some people, as you said, clearly understand, and there are some wonderful examples where the chemistry within their own team is works so well that they have a good idea and they're able then to present that good idea and make an attractive showcase for whatever they're putting forward. But you have to. I think the recipe is you have to have the conviction that your product, your service, is a great product, and then nothing stands in your way. I think if you have that enthusiasm, and we've just seen it, we've just listened to Damien tell his story,
and he's worked out how that story influences product. And some people don't.
And it all
work,
fits together.
Well,
in that case, yeah.
Some people don't work out that jigsaw and work
they don't,
out.
They don't work that out, but they also lack the passion because I think you can try to tell a story. If you don't genuinely have that passion in you. You're not going to be able to sell it very convincingly. And that's how you end up with some people who just fail to mobilize and truly engage.
Because these events are expensive. You know, it's not just the exhibition stand. You've got to have some graphics on the back. You've got to have all your samples there. You've got to give up 3 days or whatever. It's a very expensive thing to do.
To give up 3 days and you have to give up many more days in preparation. Mm. So
And then the follow-up afterwards.
So if you don't do the work in the lead up and if you don't do the work post show, then your return on that investment is not going to be the one you
expect. Yeah, and if you're selling something that's a 50p a unit thing, then that's, you know,
Many of them you can't sell at. Am I right in saying that? The vast majority of what are called trade shows that I go to, you know, to meet people or to, you know, just go and hang out with friends or people that I met in the industry, most of them are just there to try and raise awareness or to get distribution or something like that.
You're raising your profile and it's for discussions.
My favourite is when you get somebody who's obviously not used to trade exhibitions and they're on the stand and then they take a break on the stand and are eating a meat pie or something like that. And then not realising...
Well, it's better than being absent and then they can't talk to anyone who comes along.
Is it?
Maybe.
Is it?
Maybe.
You could argue that the present is it's better to have them there than to not have them there. But it's disappointing when that happens.
We have very strict rules when we do it, but I'm lucky enough to have got a lot of staff. So we always have three people because it is the most tiring thing in the world to be on an exhibition stand all day and people don't understand that it is. You've got to look perky and look good and whatever and you need breaks. Need to drink loads of water. But also, I won't have anybody eating on the stand. I mean, it's just, I find it hilarious when somebody's, because I can't interrupt somebody if they're eating their lunch. So then you might as well not be there, actually, because we're British and wouldn't possibly interrupt somebody.
No, it's not. That's a recipe for disaster. I mean, if you make the investment, it's a conscious step and then you have to follow it through all the way. And that means you have to have enough staff. You have to have trained staff and qualified staff. You need to have staff who can then answer the relevant questions. It's not good enough to then read the back of the label of the noodles to try to remember what the ingredients are. You have to have eaten it, you have to have tasted it, you have to have lived it, and you have to have that conviction. Otherwise, it's pointless.
And just like anything in business, I guess you have to have a purpose for being there. You have to say, right, I'm going to this thing because of I want to get this out of it or what have you.
Rather than be very clear about your vision for that. Yes.
Otherwise, you're just wasting your time.
That was a really nice little segue, that actually, Guy, because the vision. Food Vision Global event is really where your passion is and where your sort of expertise is. Tell us a little bit about, because I know you've held one recently, your recent Food Vision Global event.
Yeah, our most recent event was in London and we held it last month. It was the first time that we had brought this global event to London. It was held in France previously and it's really a platform to bring together the industry leaders from across the food and nutrition industry to think about new ways, new products, new routes to market, where innovation is going, what is innovation, what should innovation be, what do we want food to become, to develop, what are the key issues and to target. We never we don't presume to have all the answers, but it's a platform
it's
to
exploring them.
It's exploring them. It's exploring them and it's trying to bring together an industry that is quite broad from small startups to extremely large multinationals who are often perceived as the baddies because they stick weird stuff into their products. But we find that this platform is a unique opportunity to really generate good dialogue and
I mean, I was at an event, I was asked to speak at an event a couple of weeks ago and they had all the chief innovation officers, whatever they're called, from all these big companies. So there was Procter & Gamble, United Biscuits, PepsiCo, all the big chaps there. Lovely, amazing people. And they were all trying to discuss how do we innovate inside those big companies when people like Damien are just innovating so easily. They've come up with ideas and then what they're doing is they're making them happen. So it could be, it could be alcoholic jelly, which we had last week, or it could be vending machines. Mm. Well, they're far sexier than that, obviously. But and they're really wringing their hands saying, how can we get innovation inside our big companies? The answer for me is you can't, mate, actually. Because your structures aren't set up for it. And even if you do come up with something amazing, somebody kills it at birth because the investment will be huge, to bring it to market. And they're not prepared to disrupt. They've got disrupt sort of divisions, but it just goes against every single thing that you've put in place as a huge multinational. And what they need to do is connect with people like Damien and go to events, with you and connect with people that are and work together to do these innovations, because if you get an innovation through in a big company, you're an amazing person because it's so difficult.
Can I just add something there? Actually, funny enough, just on that, just a few months ago, I was asked by Procter & Gamble to come and speak to 60 of their senior executives. Mm. And they asked me, because they heard about our brand and saw what we're doing, and they asked me to come and do a topic, an hour talk to their 60 execs, senior execs in the UK. And the topic was Think Like a Startup. They wanted their execs to stop thinking like, how they think and start to think more agile and as more as an entrepreneur. So they changed the way you these monoliths work. You know, it takes 2 years to get an idea through in Procter & Gamble,
it's
where
too late.
In a startup you can do it the next day. And you know, so, yeah.
It's very hard, isn't it? Mm. I used to work at Barclays Bank in the communication department. And when I first got there, they brought me in to make it all quick and new and just, you know, in those days, it wasn't a word like disruption, but it was really. And then I said, oh, can you let me know how you sign off a press release and if I want to do stuff? They gave me a two-page diagram of how many, it's about 20 or 30 people you have to go through in order to get something signed off. It's like, well, that's not going to happen then, is it? Because you have to be accountable. Mm. Whereas you only have to be accountable to yourself.
That's it.
And if you think it's a good idea, you'll do it.
I dream it at night and do it in the morning.
And if it's not, then you can learn from it and put it into the next iteration.
Yeah. And you can't do that. Even if we planted the lovely Damien Lee inside Procter & Gamble, I doubt you'd get anything through that.
You'd probably run out within a couple of days.
I'd be gone.
Or they'd kill you.
One or the other.
But it's impossible. But they're great at other things. So scale up, size, distribution, that they really understand that. So it does feel to me like we need to find a way to get these worlds to be closer together, which is what your idea is for
and
these
that's,
events.
And that's what we can see is happening already. I mean, they are taking such an active interest into startups. And I mean, it is difficult when you're a monolith. It is difficult when you are such a large organization. Yeah. It's hard to be agile, to move then this big beast around. But what we have seen over the course of the past years is that there is a really strong will not only to pay lip service with a disruptive department that is supposed to look at that, but to actually do more, and various organizations are supporting through incubator funds and startup help. So they are clearly seeking each other out already, and our platform is trying to help in there as well.
For me, there is a bit of a problem though, in that the big monoliths, have been a force for good in some respects, but not in others, and the small producers hate them. They absolutely hate them. And they do believe that they've created a world which we're in, a food world which we're in, and they're responsible. And therefore, the small ones are trying to unravel and undo what those people have done. I mean, you're almost describing that yourself, Damien, actually. I'm unraveling what people have done because I don't agree with it. So it's actually quite difficult to get these two groups of people together because their mindsets are so different and yet they can learn so much off each other.
Yeah, but if we can keep nudging them in the right direction, we don't need to destroy them completely or completely unravel them. I don't think that would help or benefit any of us.
But I agree.
But if we can, if the pressure from consumer, if the pressure from startups, if the pressure from new research into nutrition and what is really good for us and what we should be eating and how we should be eating, if all of that, all of these little incremental changes, if that keeps pushing, then there will be a shift that will benefit society overall
and make these worlds meet.
And I think that's one of the key things. I see it less as a battle, and I do appreciate that there's some opinions where it's very, very conflictual. But I think what's more interesting is actually to get that debate going, and then to look at the elements that unite us rather than the ones that push us further apart, and then see how we can help the big guys to become more.
Because it seems like there's a little bit of it's a bit like a Venn diagram where you've got the big guys and the small guys, and there's bits of them that they really don't align well with, and they don't like those aspects of each other, and yet there's the little overlappy bit where they could, you know, where they could make some really interesting things happen. And it's just kind of finding the forum or the format, maybe how that would work.
And in your sort of food vision work, is there any particular trends that you're quite excited about at the moment that you're seeing?
Oh, we're seeing lots of exciting trends. I mean, one is technology and technology, how it impacts on how we eat and what we eat. So the more of the knowledge of what our bodies need, and therefore what should we eat when, and how is our microbiome reacting to it, and my nutritional needs profile is completely different to yours, and we all have different needs. So that's one of the
I mean, it's hilarious that you get diet advice. So the government says, you know,
everyone should do this, we should all
be low fat. Well, that's fine, but actually we're all different people, and actually low fat might be absolutely the right thing for one person, but absolutely the wrong thing for somebody else. And I think the days of us looking at you know, blanket advice, food advice, is we will look back on it and say it's hilarious, because what we need to do is find out what is great for our own body and our own makeup, and then seek those foods out. And we're going to see a lot of that, aren't we?
Absolutely. And that's one of the major trends right now. It's personalized nutrition, is what should I be eating? And at Food Vision last month, I mean, we heard that you're talking about fat. We heard one of the key things from Professor Becta was eat more cheese, fatty French cheese. So,
that's excellent advice.
Oh, excellent. I'm fine. And we don't agree with blanket advice, but we do agree with that.
We do agree with that one. I know we can pick and choose here. I think it's a good idea. But that is going to become, and that links very, very strongly with the technology, because as we're all wearing a little machines on our wrists that will tell us how many steps and how many calories and how many this and that, we will know what we need. And therefore, we have a much better way of then choosing what we should eat when. And if that then works with manufacturers who bring together the right product, I think it's a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we've been seeing recently is payment. It's called the pain of paying. So trying to take the pain out of paying. And I think it's interesting, this wearable technology. So we, you know, but I don't want to wear a Google Glass because it makes me look like a dork, you know, and I don't want to have an Apple Watch because I've got a really nice watch here and somebody gave it to me and I'm not going to wear an Apple Watch. What we're seeing is payment chips that are then being inserted into everyday stuff that we want to wear anyway. And I think that's a really interesting trend, is that sort of technology is shrinking and then becoming invisible, because what we don't want to do is look like, because we're British, we don't want to look like an idiot, and it's obvious.
So, I'm Austrian, I don't want to wear a Google Glass. It's invisible, not intrusive, doesn't, you don't want to flash,
still does the same,
you can't give you that.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if in the future they're implanting them directly into your arm.
They are, so they are. Scandinavia in particular are not having it in their watches, thanks very much, having it under their skin.
Well, then no one can nick it, which is great, right?
Unless
they dig it out with a knife or something. But let's not think about that.
Which might be a bit of a worry. So I think that's it. Anything else that you're very excited by?
The way that new protein products are being built in a lab right now, and I'm not just talking about Professor Post's lab-grown burger that we had a couple of years ago, but many more products are now being just engineered from their molecular little pieces from milk that tastes like real cow's milk, but does not come from a cow, and we're just looking at that. And chefs have experimented with that for some time being, but what we're seeing now is a more decisive trend that is going to get into mainstream. And
meat replacement in particular, I think a lot of people realise that
clean meat and stuff like
we can't have cows around the planet.
Forms of protein,
different forms of protein. Anything you're excited by, Damien? I want to talk for ages now, but we're running out of time. Anything you're seeing? Apart from your own vending machines.
Look, I'm just excited, going back to the events. I mean, some of the exhibitions, I mean, some of the great food and that's coming out is just, I get excited when I go to these events, IFE coming up and so on. So I just love walking around to the stands and just thinking, wow, you know, what are these some great entrepreneurs and innovators are doing with food, boost, proteins, and the food's really going healthy, which is great.
Yeah, it is.
People are really standing up and taking notice that, you know, you are what you eat and let's eat better.
And as you say, deconstructing stuff and looking at what you can take out so you don't have to have it in there, and almost starting from the ground up, which is what you did with yours. I'm seeing a lot of that. There are huge amounts of people out there, though, and it's a very, very crowded market. And I think one of the things to take away from today, if you're interested in getting into food, is, you know, Damon's a businessman. He understands how businesses work, and he just happens to be in food. And if you do get into food, it's still a business, isn't it?
Definitely.
It has to come first and foremost, for sure.
And as you said, you took 2 months just working on your business plan.
Yes. Yeah. If you want to stick around and have longevity in your business, you've got to do it.
You've got to do that. Well, fascinating stuff. And exhibitions that are coming up that we're keen on. The International Food Exhibition is on soon. Quite a lot over the summer, isn't there? A few different ones.
Yeah, no, big busy calendar. We're preparing our Food Vision Asia event next month in
Singapore. Food Vision Asia?
Yeah,
you're going to have to trot off to Singapore, are you? What a shame.
A long flight, very uncomfortable. No, but very exciting there, and we're looking at what's happening across Asia. different dynamic there, obesity, a growing concern, and we again looking at the particular nutrition that it would be best suited and what should be done in the markets there. So interesting topics coming up.
Yeah, that's good. And interestingly, Southeast Asian flavors are big over here, actually, funny enough.
Yes.
Aren't they, at the moment? It's a trend.
As a trend here, yeah. And when you're in Singapore, you cannot miss any of the European flavors who are encroaching as well.
They're much more interested now than we're much more interested in there. So that's rather bizarre. So that's a really good program again this week. Two great guests. Don't forget, is it the last week that you can do it?
The Food Talk Awards are going to be, well, they're happening in June, but the date for entries closes tomorrow. So if you are a food innovator and you have something amazing that you would like to tell us about and have the opportunity to get on the show, then go to the foodtalkawards.com, have a read through all the stuff there and get in there before the cutoff.
Absolutely. And the prizes for those are you'll be featured on the radio programme, so you've got to get in there, so you can't get a better prize than that. And also all the publicity that goes with it. And anything from today and past programmes, please go on to foodtalk.co.uk and we can put you into any links that we have, particularly Damien's stuff. And obviously all the stuff William Reid, all the exhibitions, so that'll all be on there. And if you want to send Guy any abuse, Twitter at Food Talk Show.
That's
nice, right. Programme again. Goodbye, everybody.
Lovely talking to you guys.
Bye.